This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
U.S.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call from 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. So give us a call or send us an email. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. Well, today we're going to preview the upcoming Big Ten tournament. We're going to chat with Adam Ruff, the producer at Spartan Sports Network. And let's bring in Adam. Adam, how you doing today, my man?
Earl, I am doing great. How are you, my friend?
Hey, looking good to that Big Ten tournament. I think it's going to be pretty interesting. I mean, I looked at some of all the matches. I want you to tell me, Bo, and give me your breakdown on all the matches. But it looks like we're going to have some pretty good games this year.
Oh, without question. I mean, I was just looking over the bracket yesterday myself, and it's amazing all the great games we're going to have. I mean, it could be the best tournament they've had in history in the Big Ten. And, you know, you look at it and you don't really know where you're going to go. Typically, I think, you know, you see Michigan State say, hey, if they win their first game in the quarterfinals, they'll be taking on Wisconsin. But look, Wisconsin could be playing Indiana, and Indiana is one of the hottest teams in the Big Ten right now. You know, and then Northwestern, they could be a factor, especially as they're playing for their NCAA tournament lives. And then Purdue, they've been on a roll of late as well. So you never know. It could be the teams 1 through 4 might not even make it to the finals. You never know with how stacked this league is. But I know one thing. I'm going to be down there, and I'm going to enjoy it.
Yeah, Adam, it's interesting. I think the biggest point for this whole tournament is that all these teams will be playing on a neutral site, except for maybe Indiana and Purdue probably have played there occasionally from time to time. But it really is a new game for all these teams playing in a different site and a different environment. It'll be interesting to see how they handle it.
Oh, yeah, it always is. And you brought up Indiana-Purdue. I remember a couple years ago when Indiana only won 6 or 7 games the whole year, and the place was packed with Hoosiers fans. It was so loud, even though they were down like 20 points in their Big Ten tournament game. So you know this year that place is going to be packed with Hoosier fans. And so, you know, Penn State in their first-round match, they're going to have a tough time. Then if they go on to play Wisconsin in the quarterfinals, look out for the Badgers. But I think that's going to play a great advantage for Indiana, mostly. Purdue last year when Michigan State played Purdue, there were quite a few Purdue fans, obviously, but not nearly what there are Indiana fans there on any given year. But it's definitely going to be interesting to see how teams react to it. I know Iowa's been on a roll of late. Well, for Iowa anyways, they're 5-4 in their last 9 games. But Illinois, you know, a team like that, can they bounce back? Doubtful. They can't really score anymore. And there's a lot of different question marks out there, but we all know that any of these teams can perform and pull the upset. You know, whether it's Nebraska or Minnesota or Penn State, they can all do it. And so it's always fun to see what team will step forward in the tournament and kind of be the dark horse.
Yes, the only two teams I don't give a chance in the tournament, of course, are the two bottom feeders, Penn State and Nebraska. I don't give them much of a chance, but all the other matchups are really intriguing.
Oh, absolutely. Penn State and Nebraska, they really only had wins at home this year, so you'd like to think that, you know, they can't do it. And I'm not giving Illinois any chance either. If they get lucky and get past Iowa, I don't think there's any way they get past Michigan State. So I think there's three teams there that don't have a shot at all. But outside of that, when you're looking at 9 other teams, that's going to make for a good tournament, especially when you consider that the Big Ten has 5 teams ranked in the top 15 right now of the top 25. It's going to be a fist fight, and if you thought games were low scoring and defensive minded during the regular season, just wait till these teams are playing on back to back days.
Yes, well, let's look at the. Well, we got a caller for you. Let's go to the phones. Hello, you're on the air with Adam.
Hey, girl, how you doing, Earl?
Okay,
Adam, I got a question. I actually got a couple questions for you. One is, do you think legitimately the Big Ten is the best conference in the country? If so, why that is? And then also, Who picks up the slack for for Dawson being injured. I'm curious as to where you see Izzo going with those minutes and with that production. And I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that Dawson thing a lot. Obviously, as many people have, and I'll get to the first part of his question next, but I think in the Big Ten tournament, the Dawson loss is going to hurt a lot more because Big Ten teams know Michigan State so well. They're used to preparing for them, and Dawson was such a factor. Now, in the NCAA tournament, his loss will obviously be great. However, when you're playing a bunch of teams that don't play nearly the level of defense that the Big Ten does on a night-by-night basis, it's going to be a lot easier for guys like Brandon Wood and Keith Applin, guys who can penetrate the lane, really get in there and create their own shot for the team. I think you're going to see Applin and Wood on the offensive end really making up for a lot of what Brandon Dawson does. Now, what's going to be hard is his offensive rebounding and how he keeps the ball alive with his energy and just can tip it up. And he's a large reason why Michigan State scored so many points off of offensive rebounds, whether he's scoring or have kept the ball alive this year. That's going to be a big loss, especially in the Big Ten tournament. Now, I think when you're looking at a guy like Dawson, losing him in the NCAA tournament, defense more times than not wins out in the NCAA tournament. So I think when you see guys like Brandon Kearney step in there mostly and maybe, go small of the starting lineup and have Applin, Wood, and then maybe Thornton play the three, you're going to see the defense maybe even improve a little bit, even though Brandon Dawson got a lot better in the last, third of the Big Ten season defensively. But I think Michigan State has a lot more guys that can play defense, and that's what's needed in the NCAA tournament in my mind, because a lot of teams that don't normally play Michigan State, they are not used to the defense and the toughness and the physicality with which the game is played. And so that's always advantage Michigan State, and it's why Michigan State's always been so good in the NCAA tournament under Tom Izzo. Now, Earl, fill me in. I've run myself into a loop. What was the first question?
The first question, why do you think the Big Ten such a tough – if you think they're one of the best conferences in the nation, why do you think they are one of the best conferences in the nation?
Oh, defense. I mean, without question, it's defense. And if you look at the Big Ten, how many teams have 20 wins in the Big Ten this year? Earl, by my count, and I'm not a great math guy, but there's six. There's six guys. And far and away, that's the highest amount out of any conference. I mean, you look at even the Big East, they've got how many teams in their league? And they've only got six teams with at least 20 wins, too. So you're even there with the Big Ten. But the Big Ten does a lot more beating up on each other than the Big East does from top to bottom. And I think when you have the physicality and the defense on a day-by-day basis, that's going to prepare you to compete well with those other conferences, and that's why I think the Big Ten is the best conference, and it's proven in the strength of schedule and in the RPI. And so when you look at the schedule, the Big Ten teams play out of conference. Ohio State had a big schedule this year. Michigan did. Indiana, Wisconsin even bumped up their schedule. And Indiana as well, they're the only team to have beaten Kentucky. So, I mean, there's a lot of different factors as to why I think the Big Ten is the best conference in America. But coming from me, that doesn't necessarily mean a whole lot since I'm always covering them. But I think there's a strong case any way you look at it as to why the Big Ten is the strongest conference.
And they have two teams that have 18 wins. So you got six teams with 20 and two with 18. So that's a pretty strong testament for the Big Ten.
Yeah, and five teams are in the top 15 right now. I mean, I don't think it's just a bias from Midwest people. I think everyone knows it, and especially national people that watch a ton of basketball from different conferences all the time. You can see, I mean, Earl, are you more afraid of the third-place team in the ACC, Florida State, or more afraid of the third-place team in the Big Ten, which I suppose you'd have to go to Wisconsin or Indiana, which are the fourth- and fifth-place teams, if you discount the co-championship at the top for the three teams? I mean, you can do that with each conference and say, I would rather face the team from another conference than the Big Ten, at least in my mind.
Yeah, that would be a pretty tough outing. Hey, how do you look at that Northwestern Minnesota? Of course, you know, I'm one of those Northwestern homers who wants to see Northwestern finally get into the big dance at some time in my lifetime.
Oh, yeah, I think everybody's that way, you know, and it looks like this is their year to do it. I mean, they won't have John Scherner next year, and so I can't imagine that they'll bring in a freshman that can make up for John Scherner. So I think this is the year they're going to have to do it, but they can't play in a close game. They just can't. You can't allow it. Especially under Bill Carmody, they've never been good in game management in late game close situations. We saw it this year how many games they lost. Down the stretch, when they probably even should have won games. And Minnesota, they're a tricky team. But one thing you know about them is they always play hard and they always play physical. And so that's a tough thing for Northwestern. However, Minnesota does have some freshmen on their team, so dealing with that backdoor type of offense that Northwestern runs is going to be a struggle for Minnesota. But I think if Northwestern does win that first game against Minnesota, I think they're going to be in it. And if they do win that first game, their second matchup will be against Michigan, who they took to overtime twice and led by 7 at halftime of both games. So, I mean, if they do win that first game, like we said, they could be a big factor in the tournament as well.
Yes. I got to tell you, that Iowa-Illinois is probably the most intriguing matchup for me. I mean, Illinois, as we know, fell off the earth. And, I mean, there's just down spiraling, whereas Iowa, I would say probably the most surprising team in the Big Ten, especially on where they finished and how they finished in Big Ten. I mean, that's a team that got better during the season and finished pretty good in the Big Ten. How do you see that matchup?
Well, right now you got to like anybody playing Illinois. I mean, they've lost 11 of their last 13 and 8 of their last 9. And really, in those 11 losses of their last 13, they've only been within 10 points twice. So, I mean, they're dismal right now, and they're not playing with a lot of effort. So I do like the Hawkeyes in that game. And, you know, the way they have been playing, like you mentioned, Earl, has really been a bit of a surprise when you consider they lost to Campbell University, by 16 points at home. I mean, so they've had games like that, but they've obviously come back strong. Which is good to see from them. Fran McCaffrey's done a good job transforming that team. I mean, Malsan Basabi down low, very athletic player, does a good job on the glass as well. And then Devin Marble's done a good job running the point at many different times this year. And he's 6'5", 6'6". He's a very tough matchup for a lot of teams. And, of course, can't forget Matt Gatens. He's just gone off in the last part of his senior year. And I think he's a large reason as to why they've won, you know, 5 of their last 9 games coming down the stretch of the season, and 3 of their last 5, and they've won games against Indiana. They've beaten Wisconsin among those last 5 games. So they've done a good job there. However, it's interesting to note that they played Illinois on the 26th of February, and they lost by 11 points. So, you know, you say all that positive stuff about Iowa, negative stuff about Illinois, then you look at that. So it's kind of hard to see what's going to happen. But I would tend to think that I was going to win that game, as I imagine you probably think too.
Yes, but the game I want to see, how does Penn State have any chance at beating Indiana?
How do they?
Yeah, or do they have a chance?
I was going to say, am I supposed to try to support Penn State in this?
Yeah, can you give them any reasonable rational why they can beat Indiana?
No, I can give you none. In conference games this year, they were 0-9 away from home.
Okay.
In all games this year, they were 1-11. There's no rational reason as to think that they can win the game. I mean, they may be able to keep it close. You know, Tim Frazier's a good player, but Indiana just has far too many weapons, especially offensively for Penn State. There's no shot. There's no shot.
Okay.
I wouldn't even give them more than 0.1% chance to win that game.
Okay. Well, before we let you go, I got one more question for you. How does Michigan State, what kind of lineup? Because, you know, I asked the coach the question, who would be, how the lineup go in the Big Ten tournament. You know, he didn't give me a total answer. So how do you think the lineup's going to go? Do you think he's going to go small, or will he put Brandon Kearney in from the get-go?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I think in this situation, he's going to go with more experience. So, you know, Appling's going to be at the point, then Green at the 4, and Payne at the 5. but I think you might see Brandon Wood get back into the starting lineup. Maybe. I know he's liked bringing Brandon off the bench, but I think that might be his first option in the Big Ten tournament, and then having Thornton play the three for defensive purposes. Now, you could say maybe put Brandon Kearney in there with some veterans like Austin and Draymond and have him at the two and, you know, even relieve Keith Appling at the point at certain points, because you can do that and have Keith play the off guard where he tends to be a little bit more effective, at least offensively late in the season when he struggled to find offense from the point guard position. So I think he can go a couple different ways. But I think, you know, the safest route that he might want to try, because I know when you asked that question at the press conference the other day, he was real unsure about it, and he kind of alluded to the fact that the Big Ten tournament was going to be his testing ground for it. So if Michigan State gets by Iowa or Illinois in that first game, you might see another starting lineup the next game. Or if whoever he puts in that two spot, if he puts Wood there and bumps Thornton to the three, or like we mentioned, puts Kearney in the starting lineup, then that works in game one and they play well, then I think we'll see him stick with it. If it doesn't work well, then we won't. And, of course, he's got different – obviously he loves to tinker throughout games and use different lineups. And so it won't just be mirrored in the starting lineup. We'll see it throughout the game. And I think if the Spartans play well, you'll see something similar in the next game. And if that's what he likes, that's what he's going to go with. I think Brandon Wood will be at the two, Earl.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Adam. It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And we'll talk more as the Big Ten tournament gets going and the NC2A tournament. We'll be following the Spartans all the way.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure, Earl. Anytime I can talk to a legend like you, I will do that.
Okay, my friend. Hey, we'll talk to you later, buddy.
All right. Sounds good, Earl.
Okay. Bye-bye. And that's Adam Ruff from the Spartan Sports Network. The time, 22 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
President Obama calls the bond between Israel and the U.S. unbreakable. It's a relationship, though, showing signs of strain, particularly on the issue of Iran. I'm John Donvan. Iran, Israel, and President Obama. Plus, the elders' perspective on caring for older parents. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
This is Scott Pohl with a look at the weather. It'll be windy today and mostly sunny with a high in the low 50s. Windy and partly cloudy tonight, the low 38. Windy and partly sunny tomorrow, the high getting up to 62. Thursday will start with some rain, then turning mostly sunny. Thursday's high, 50.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. So give us a call, talk sports, or either send us an email and with your questions and comments right here at AM 870 WKAR. Once again, the numbers to call, 355-9527 or toll-free, 877-9527-870. And our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Right now, let's talk a little prep hoops as we have the Boys and Girls State Tournament going on right now. So let's bring in Dick Hoekstra, sports editor of the Lansing State Journal. Dick, how you doing?
Good, Earl.
Hey, good to talk with you. You know, we are at the Lansing Eastern, East Lansing game, and Eastern did a very good job last night, winning 90-84. What was your take on that game?
Well, I think, of course, Frederick Edmond just had an incredible game, 28 points, 19 rebounds, 7 block shots, and 6 assists, and a lot of those block shots happened during the second quarter when they were only leading by 123-22, and then went on a 15-0 run. And I think, you know, East Lansing was, I think Eastern turned up their defense. So East Lansing started committing turnovers, but then I remember when they tried to get the ball inside, Frederick was there blocking a whole lot of shots during that stretch. And I think Eastern turned up their defense and made it a little bit harder for East Lansing to get their threes. Remember, they hit 9 of them in the first half, but only 4 of them during the second half. And another run midway through the third quarter, and Rod said that he thought, you know, that they improved their defense by not backing up. If he caught that, kind of a of a don't leave them, leave a lane open for them, you know, make him. So, yeah, it's kind of funny. I wrote my story that, you know, in the 90-84 game, you don't usually credit defense as being the difference, but that's kind of that's what Rod said, and I would have to concur. I mean, they did a lot better job defensively on East Lansing in the second half and in the latter portion of the first half than they did at the outset.
Oh, that's true, because I noted that you know, Eastern got so many easy buckets, as we know. You know, they got a lot of layups in that game, and you have to credit that to their defense. I mean, East Lansing, they didn't give you a very good defensive effort, but Eastern, Eastern's defense was definitely a difference in that game.
Yeah, they're going to be forced to reckon with, I think, in that district. I was a little bit surprised to see St. John's lose to DeWitt. I thought, DeWitt crushed them when Harden and a couple other players were hurt, but the other time when Harden was there, St. John's beat him, and so I kind of thought St. John's would be the team that would advance, but neither one of them was going to beat Eastern probably on Wednesday night anyway, more than likely. I know you got to play them, but the interesting game will probably, the more interesting game I would think would probably be the Okemos-Waverly game, the second one. That's going to be an interesting matchup. I mean, and Waverly, as I've seen them throughout the years, throughout the year, they kind of come and go as Rashawn Carroll goes. He's going to Lake Superior State. He's a very good player. When he's on, they're a whole lot better team. I saw when they played Lansing Catholic, he was on, and boy, they gave Catholic all they could handle. But then in other games, I've seen him where I remember against Eastern, he really struggled and they really got beat pretty badly. So I think they kind of come and go with him. I mean, they have some other good players. D. Roberts is a very good player. They got Ken Expect inside who can have good games from here now and then. But for the most part, they kind of come and go as Rashawn goes. So if he's on, they might beat Okemos. And if he's not, well, maybe not.
Well, how do you see some of the other districts? Like in Sexton's district, how do you see that one and some of the other districts?
Well, I certainly don't think anybody's going to beat Sexton. And I'm not totally positive that Lansing Catholic is going to beat Williamston on Wednesday night. Williamston gave him a pretty close game the last time. I kind of think when push comes to shove, Catholic will still get him. Before last week, I thought just maybe Catholic might give Sexton a good game. But, boy, after seeing the way East Lansing destroyed them, I don't know. I'm not so sure anymore. And Zwick's a great coach, and they've got, and Repikowski is a great shooter. And they got inside people that are good players. Cooper Rush is a great athlete and has a nose for the ball and makes great plays inside. But Sexton has so many weapons. It's
just
loaded.
that's the same thing I say, Dick. When you look at Sexton and any other team, another team who plays them has to have at least three scores. And I haven't seen any teams that has three legitimate scores on their team yet.
Not on most nights, anyway. I mean, you know, East Lansing last night is an example of a team that's, you know, on a given night, if McAdoo's on, you know, then maybe. But, yeah, it's on a consistent basis, nobody comes at you with three Division I's. You know, you got a Michigan State, future Michigan State, or a future Iowa player in Clemens, and then Cleveland State with Forbes. I mean, no teams have that.
No, that's true. It's a rarity in high school ball that you have a team that has that many. And they're going, you know, the big fella's going to get a scholarship from somewhere.
You bet. You would think so. So, yeah, really, it's probably going to wind up being four D1s.
Yes.
Who knows about Trevor Manuel, the tall freshman? I mean, he's only a freshman, so it's hard to tell where. But I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, as tall as he is and as athletic, maybe he's another one that could get a D1 down the road.
Yeah, a team I thought that might develop and maybe give Sexton a little bit of a battle. I don't think they'll win, but I thought Mason might be able to give them a little bit of a battle, but they have to develop a third score, and Mason hasn't done that yet. They've got two pretty consistent scores, but they certainly need another one if they even want to be in the game with Sexton.
Well, Mason's in the district with Holt. And I actually picked Holt in the paper on Sunday because Mason's, they're 18-2, and that's a great record, but they played Waverly close. But I think, Holt has been battle tested in the tough CAAC blue, and they took Eastern to overtime and played them close in the other game, took East Lansing to overtime and played them close in the other game, and I just think they're just more battle-tested, even though their record's not as good, not to mention the district is at Holt. So I'm kind of picking Holt to beat Mason on Friday. Of course, Holt's got to get past Jackson on Wednesday.
And that's going
to
be a toughie.
Yeah, that's no easy deal either. I've seen Jackson before, and they can fill it up. I'd pick Holt, especially on their home floor.
I would do that as well, because I think Mason really needs another weapon, and they just got two weapons, but they need a third one, that's for sure. Hey, what about the girls? Were you surprised to see East Lansing beat Waverly there the other night?
Definitely, because I thought, Natalie Rose Brogan was the top scorer for East Lansing. Yes, Rob Smith pointed out they don't have anybody that's averaging in double figures, so they have been kind of even throughout the whole year, balanced scoring-wise, but she was kind of their top scorer, and she had that one stretch where she had a couple of really big games and shot like 88%. We made her an athlete the week in the State Journal. So she, on a given night, I thought she would be a possibility to maybe help them pull an upset, and when she wasn't even playing because she got hurt in the previous game against Eastern, I thought, boy, their chances aren't very good. But a couple of players just played fantastic. And Michi Thompson played the best game she's played all
year,
the ones I've seen. And Taylor Gordon got her, I believe that's her first start of the year. Maybe she might have started one or two other games, but she played really well defensively and then hit some clutch free throws down the stretch. But it still surprised me, Earl. I mean, I thought Victoria Milton is so clutch for Waverly. I think she might be the best player in the area. And I just had a feeling that she was going to find a way to pull that thing out, and she almost did, but she didn't. That was impressive, but surprised me, no doubt.
Yes, I know. I was surprised at how well East Lansing has always been a pretty good defensive team, but their defense that night was pretty sharp, as well as their passing, because they didn't turn the ball over very much against that Waverly pressure. So you have to give East Lansing a lot of credit for that.
Yes, after the game, Rob Smith said Piper Tucker was a key for that, and that's true. She was she's a taller player. And she's been a guard before on a lower level. So she's a good ball handler. She's taller, so she's a hard matchup for people and very athletic. And I think she was a key in breaking the press and helping them to not turn the ball over so much against Waverly, which is, kind of one of the things that Waverly uses to get up on these teams and put them away.
When you look at the girls' district play going into the regionals, what are some of the better teams of the area you think is going to fare well?
Well, that's a good question because, I mean, our area teams are up against some really tough ones. I mean, the only teams that I can see tonight that are sure wins is Lansing Christian against the Saline Washtenaw Christian. I don't think, Saline Washtenaw Christian, their record's 10-6. That sounds like they're playing a lot of little Christian schools and maybe some homeschool teams and that sort of thing. So I think they're probably for sure going to win over there at Lansing Christian tonight. And it looks like Eaton Rapids, to me, will probably win on their home floor against Ann Arbor Gabriel Richard. But everybody else has to play a tough team. East Lansing has to play Richland Gull Lake, which has made deep tournament runs in Class D. They're kind of like DeWitt, where this is their first year in A. And Holt has to play number 6 East Kentwood. Portland, even though they're number 2 and undefeated, has to play a Grand Rapids Catholic Central team that's 19-3 and just knocked out number 5 East Grand Rapids on Friday night in their district final. So that's going to be a tough game. Corona might get by tonight, but then they have number 1 Goodrich waiting on Thursday, so they're probably not going to go far. Plum Westphalia has to play number 2 and undefeated Concord over at Maple Valley, so they'll probably lose that one. Carson City Crystal has to play number 1 Morley Stanwood, 23-0 up at Kent City, so kind of have a hard time seeing them win that game, even though they play great defense. And I love the job that Larry Farmer has done up there. He had an 0-20 team, Earl, 2 years ago. He took over as a coach last year. They didn't win any CMAC games the first round, wound up winning 5 and making their district final last year. And then this year they go 18-4. And that guy has really done a great job you never get a ton of athletes or anything. So even at a small school like that. So you just have to make the best with what you got. And he's got a couple athletes and he's taught them to play great defense. And so I think they'll keep the game close, but I kind of doubt they can beat number 1 Morley Stanwood. And then the last team is Portland St. Patrick. They have to play Wyoming West Michigan Lutheran, which is 21-2. I'm not sure how good they are because St. Pat's just last week upset a Sacred Heart team that only had two losses. So a good record doesn't necessarily indicate a team that's all that outstanding. St. Patrick plays in a tough league. They play mostly Class C teams in the CMAC. So they, and of course, Al Schrobbins won six state titles or something like that over there. So they're real good.
Okay. Hey, let's look at the boys. We know we've got tough competition in the boys A, B, C, and D. Who do you think is going to make it out of the districts in those four classes?
Okay. Well, I've got. You know, Portland's got a chance over in the Lakewood district because they and Thornapple Kellogg have the two best records. They're both 12-8, and when you could kind of compare the scores, it looks like they might be able to take that. And I think Olivet might be able to make the final over at Parma Jackson County Western. I picked Marshall to beat them, but it's, you know, that they might be able to win that one. Plum Westphalia and Langsburg, I think, are headed for a great district final over there in Langsburg. Plum Westphalia is undefeated, but one of their two closest games was against Langsburg at PW. Langsburg led the whole way, and PW got him at the end, 49-45. So you would think, you know, so that old adage, hard to beat a good team three times. Greg Mitchell's a great coach. He's really good at coming up with, you know, box and ones, diamond and twos, all this triangle and twos. All these special defenses to try and shut people down and make them work a little extra harder to get the win. So, you know, they know PW really well. So, and it's on their home court. So, you know, I think that's going to be a really good final on Friday night. But either way, you're probably going to get a local team out of there. So, I guess I picked PW to beat them, but I wouldn't be shocked if Langsburg gets them. And then Ithaca, I think they just lost last Friday night in their. Lost out for their league title in the TVC West, and they have a good chance to win that district over at Montebello. I picked them to play Beale City in the final and win it. And then finally, up at Fulton, I mean, they got. I think they're going to win and make a pretty deep run. Their only losses were two to PW and one to Langsburg. I'm really surprised they're not ranked higher than number 10, or at least they were number 10. Last week's poll, I forget, let's see here, what are they in this today? They moved, they're still number 10 today. So, yeah, I mean, I think they should be ranked higher than that. I mean, they made the president last year, so. Yep, so that's kind of the way to look at the guys.
Okay, so we got the girls, the guys going now. Both sides are going well. Let's talk a little bit of wrestling. St. John's, in Massa went unbeaten his whole career. He's probably the best wrestler in the state, one of the best wrestlers in the country, isn't he?
He is, and I saw that he had a really hard time choosing his college. I guess he's really good friends with one of the assistants over at Michigan State, and he's been watching their meets for years. But I guess he feels like Michigan has a couple of wrestlers who will be better training partners for him. And facilities that'll help him get ready for the Olympics, because that's something that he and, if you remember the Simmons brothers,
sure,
when they wrestled at Michigan State, I guess, you know, that's something that the really top-notch wrestlers keep their eyes on is the Olympics. And so he feels like, you know, Michigan's a better place for him to get ready for the Olympics and to maximize his talents as a college athlete. So, but I guess it was a very tough decision. And wow, yeah, what a high school career he's had, and what a great program St. John's has going up there. Wow, six individual state titles last Saturday up at the Palace. That's amazing.
Yes. You know, Dick, one thing, wrestlers used to didn't have an outlet other after their career was over. They could either become a high school or a college coach, but there wasn't any professional outlet. But now with MMA around and going, a lot of wrestlers are going into MMA, and that gives them a chance to still do a little wrestling, but the chance to make some money, and that's probably good for wrestling. You think that's, I'm not sure whether it's really good for wrestling or not because of all the injuries you can have, but what's your thoughts on MMA and wrestling? Going into MMA and getting a chance to make some decent income.
Well, yeah, I've seen that a couple of Michigan State wrestlers have gone on to do that. I'm not a big proponent of MMA, yes. But that's just my opinion.
Okay. Hey, Dick, it's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. I know I'll see you at another basketball game. I know we cross paths at many of the games, so good luck, and we'll see you at the next game, buddy.
Sounds good, Earl.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you. The time is 40 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
Most pet owners agree their dogs, cats, and fish are sources of joy. Now researchers are figuring out how the happiness goes both ways. Rebecca Johnson studied volunteers who walk dogs at animal shelters, and the dogs...
They were significantly more likely to be adopted if they were in the dog walking group.
I'm John Donvan. The Science of Pet Therapy. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
It'll be mostly sunny today and windy, too, with a high of 52 degrees. Tonight, windy and partly cloudy with a low in the upper 30s. Tomorrow, the high gets up to 62. It'll be windy and partly sunny Wednesday. Rain in the morning on Thursday before turning mostly sunny, the high 50. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527 or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. So give us a call or send us an email. Talk sports with us Monday through Friday right here on AM 870 WKAR. Now, if you've been following the Detroit Lions, then you have to know that Cliff Averill has been hit with the franchise tag. But it's not exclusive, so someone can sign Averill, but if they do, they'll have to give up 2 first-round picks if they want to sign Cliff Averill away from the Lions. Now, he's been very productive over his 4 years, hasn't missed a game, and, that's a player they want to keep. A very good pass rusher for them. That's one of those things people say, well, if it wasn't for Ndamukong Suh and how they're putting so much pressure on the defensive front, that maybe he wouldn't be quite as successful as he has. But he has been, and, you have to have all the pieces to, especially in the sport of football. And if any place is really more successful, that's just a better plus for the team, that's for sure. Now, if you've been following college basketball, you have to see Eastern Michigan's coach. He was named the coach of the year in the MAC conference. Congratulations to him from Eastern Michigan. They had a pretty good year for Eastern. They had a pretty good year. They were almost 500, but it was a good season for Eastern Michigan. And when you look at the Big Ten, you've heard from the Big Ten released many of the awards last night. Draymond Green was the player of the year. Izzo, MSU coach Tom Izzo was the player of the year. Just a couple of the things going on, and the Big Ten first team and all that was released. So congratulations to the Big Ten and players of the year, in Draymond Green and coach of the year in Tom Izzo. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on AM 870. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Well, today we've got Aaron Young with us. And Aaron, I want you to jump in here and give you a chance to give your thoughts on the recent Big Ten game. And what was your thoughts on that Michigan State-Ohio State game?
It was a good one. I told you it was going to be close, but
yes.
I was wrong in thinking that they were going to pull through.
I did, too. I thought they were going to win it as well.
Yeah. I saw some of the interviews afterwards. Coach said, they made a lot of mistakes that they normally don't make. But, that's part of the emotion. And I like the fact that he moves the senior day kind of awards thing after the game. Whether that has any effect, I don't know. But it was a great game. I'm glad it was very physical game, that's for sure. A lot of stuff the refs let go, some of the stuff they called that shouldn't have been called, but it is what it is. You got to deal with it. So great game. Unfortunately, they just didn't win. But, they still share the title, and we'll take it. And, that's great.
Yes, the injury, I think that really cost him that game more likely. Once he went out in the first half, it was a different game in the second half.
Yeah, for sure. That was, you don't see that on the TV. You don't see how it affects the players internally, that kind of deal. But that definitely hurt him. Dawson is so athletic. He can do so many things, rebound, he's so fast. So yeah, that hurt him, and you could tell that.
It did, but now it's on to the Big Ten tournament. You heard Adam and I talking about the Big Ten tournament. What's your thoughts on the tournament?
It's going to be a good one, and I might be in agreement with him about this might be the one, the best in history. I mean, the Big Ten is so good this year, and everyone knows it. There's some great matchups, so I'm looking forward to it. I'm just excited about it. You know, it's going to – I always – like, you know, some of these teams that are kind of on the bubble – I always like to see how well they play, but then, you know, the teams, you know, obviously Michigan, Michigan State, and Ohio State, it's going to be interesting to see how they do because, you know, we're already lost Dawson, Michigan State has, so, you know, do they risk, you know, playing really hard and they might lose someone again, but, you know, again, they want to make sure they probably get that number one seed coming terminate time, so it's going to be very interesting. I'm glad there's a lot of great teams, a lot of great games.
I think, well, if you look at the tournament, if Michigan State or Ohio State win it, and maybe even Michigan, one of those three would probably get a number one seed, or is it? Would you just say it's between Michigan and Michigan State and Ohio State?
I think it's going to be
for that number one seed.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough call because Michigan State and Ohio State, with where they're ranked, I think it's a very tough call because I think Michigan State will probably – let's say Michigan State won the tournament, definitely number one seed, that's for sure, especially with their strength of schedule, that kind of thing, RPI and all that good stuff. So Ohio State's win it, that's hard to say because they lost to Michigan State once, but they also, you know, shared the Big Ten title. So, and with all these computers and all these polls that happen, it's hard to say. But if Michigan wins it outright, the tournament, you know, they shared the title. So, and, you know, they beat Michigan State once. So, it's hard to say. You throw up your arms and say, okay, well.
Yeah, there are so many good teams in the Big Ten, that's for sure. They're considered the top three. But those, six teams with 20 wins, so that makes, like I said, that makes the Big Ten the preeminent conference, I think, in the nation. And you had two other teams after that had 18 wins. So you've really got eight very strong teams in the Big Ten this year. Hopefully, I'm still hoping, I think you're hoping as well, as Northwestern will finally get their first chance in the Big Dance.
Yeah, it's almost one of those underdog stories that every single person, I don't think there's a person in the country that would say, I don't want them in. It's like, well, there's absolutely, you can't give me any good reason not to, you know, want them to get in. So I really hope they do well. You know, that would be one, that'd be great for the conference. And two, obviously for their own program, it would just be an amazing thing. And like you said, in your lifetime, you'd like to see them come
yes.
in.
once in my lifetime, it would be nice to see that.
Right, right. And hopefully it's this year. I think, you know, they have a chance. And we'll see how they do.
Yes, that's for sure. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. A lot have been talked about it that has come up. I don't know if you and I had a chance to talk about the hits on players in the NFL. That's certainly a big subject in the news today, in the last few days, about the players having bounties. Some defensive coaches have bounties on the opposing team's offensive players. It's not a surprise. It's something that's been going on for years, that's for sure. But what's your thoughts on this whole players getting paid for bounties or paid for hits?
Yeah, I mean, it's not surprising that there's bounties, but the problem I have is the fact that there's money involved with it. You know, if there wasn't money involved, there wouldn't be a big deal because that's how they always play. They tell them to play hard, hit them where it hurts. The old saying, that's NFL football. That's how it is. But the fact that there's money involved, you know, I have an issue with that. You know, that's I don't know, to use an example outside of the NFL, but that saying, oh, hey, go hit someone really hard. If you hit them in the right spot and keep them down on the ground for more than 30 seconds, hey, I'll give you so much money. That I have a problem with, which I think a lot of other people do, which is why this is getting such, obviously, a lot of recognition in the news, sports world. So I think it's wrong, but, you know, I don't mind people playing hard, but let's not hit people for money. That they get paid already to do that. So let's not give them extra money to hit them harder.
So either I look at it too as way, well, they're getting extra money. They're like getting a little bonus to lay an extra lick or make that a tougher hit. Should maybe they in essence just raise players' overall salary for by another $5,000 or $10,000 or something like that. We know owners don't really want to probably give the players any more money for sure. But I don't know what can be done. It seems like they should be able to do something for the players that they shouldn't have to need that bounty to get for them to make a good hit, because as you said, they're going to make good hits anyway. They're going to make good hits. So why should you have to pay someone extra for that? But if you've already been paying some, but they say a lot of teams, we don't know how many teams, but I would say probably at least half the teams are probably involved in getting a little cash for making a hit. So it'll be interesting to see if they can come up with a number of teams that are doing it. But I would say probably at least they say it's been common. I know I've been hearing about it in the game since the 50s, 60s, actually. I've heard a lot about those guys getting hits, and we've seen so many good players taken out. And that's what is wrong with the game. So many good players are lost because of these bounties or because of an illegal hit or something. But, it's one of those things that I really don't know if you can clean it up, if you can, because it's coached that way. I give the coaches a lot of blame on that, because the coaches coach that way, and the players would play through the end of the whistle or end of the whistle plus.
Right. They're coached that way, but also say someone gets severely injured because of a very hard hit. But if it's clean, then people will look back, well, was there a bounty? But how do you prove that?
Yes, exactly.
If it's clean and it's legit, and they get injured, that's part of the game. Now, obviously, we all know that there's illegal hits and wrong ways to do hits, especially on quarterbacks. That maybe can be investigated more. But if it's a clean hit, even if there was a bounty, but it's a clean hit, what can you do about it? And how do you prove it? So I think that also it's a very kind of touchy situation. But like you said, they've been doing it for years and years and years. So we'll see how it pans out. But I didn't realize there was that many teams involved. I'm not surprised by it, but
Well, that's a sort of a guess. I wouldn't be surprised that at least half of the teams that are in the league. I mean, how many gets caught? That's the thing. You do these things, it's whoever gets caught. It's just like in college football. Most teams break the rules in college football, but most of them don't get caught. So, if you get caught, then you have to pay for it. But a lot of teams break rules in college football, but they never get caught. And it's always been that way, and I know that's not going to change in college football. So if you've been putting out hits for years or getting hits, so how can you tell? Because if you're a player and you're getting money, getting paid for that, why would you squeal on yourself or on your teammates?
Right, exactly. So, and it's the NFL, and we all know there's a lot of money involved with the NFL.
Yes.
That's a given. So say a team does get caught, what are the repercussions? I mean, what happens? I mean, there's since there's so much money involved with one organization and just one team,
yes,
it's not like the NFL is going to come down and ban them from the season or something, or take away a trophy or something. They may suspend a player or whatever the case may be. But, the team is still going to be able to play and play just fine and go on normally. See, in the college world, we've seen it with, USC and others, other teams, they take away trophies. And so then you lose recruits, so then it affects your team for a couple of years, that kind of thing. But in the NFL, it's not the same in the NFL. So the punishment, they have to figure out a way to make a good punishment if they actually want to, figure a way to do this and punish those teams that are doing it for the bounties. But we'll see what happens once they get more information and figure out who's involved in all this good stuff.
Right. Right now it's just New Orleans Saints, but I got a feeling it's going to expand and we're going to hear about a few other teams out there.
For sure.
Hey, give us a call on AM 870 WKAR. It's Fun 55, and we're talking sports with you right here on AM 870 WKAR. Well, Justin Verlander pitched two scoreless innings yesterday. It was nice of him to get off to a good start. I'm still wondering about the Tigers. I mean, most people have the Tigers winning their division, getting to the World Series, I'm just not sure yet. I guess I'm going to have to see, pass the old eye test with me. I'm going to have to see them for a few games. They say you really shouldn't even count those first 20 games. After 20 games, that should give you a good idea of how good the team will be. So I'm going to wait for a while because this has the potential to be a great team, but they also have some holes that got to be filled, or some players are going to have to step up. You know, just like Brandon Lynch plays a lot more second base. Whenever he's out there, everyone knows he's got to hit the ball. He's got to hit. If not, he's not going to play that much. And then, of course, there's can Austin Jackson cut down on the strikeouts? They say he's working on a new stance and all that. So the Tigers have a few holes. They haven't found a fifth starter yet. So that could be a problem. So we'll have to keep a close eye on the Tigers. But I'm not so sure. I'm not ready to give them the pennant yet. I know a few of my friends have already given them the pennant and basically giving them an entry into the World Series so far.
Yeah, and I think I'm in agreement with you on this one. We're jumping the gun a little quick here on this one. It's a long, long season. Spring training, a lot of things can happen. People can get injured there as well. And then, like you said, the first 20 games, especially in Detroit, home games with the weather the way it is, sometimes it just doesn't go in their favor. And, you know, there might be a rain delay or a snow delay for all we know. So, you know, it's a long season, especially with baseball. I've noticed a lot. Players will be great in the first half. Then they have the All-Star break, and they come back in the second half, and for some reason their performance just drops, or vice versa. So it just depends. And then, like you said, can Austin Jackson have those take down his strikeouts? I don't know. If he's working on a great better stance, working on that, that's great. Whether or not they get that fixed, we'll wait and see. But and then the fifth starter, that's important, that rotation. Now, does it help that Verlander is as good as he is? Yes. And it's good that he, you know, pitched two scoreless innings and kind of just get that arm warm up here spring season. But, you know, and then with Brandon Inge, too, if he wants to play more, he's going to have to hit better. That's always how it's been with him. So we'll see how it is. I'm not writing him in for a pennant yet. I'll maybe, after a couple games in the season, see how things work out. Obviously, I think they play Boston first three games of the season, first series there. So we'll see how things go.
Yes, that's for sure. Hey, before I let you go, let's talk about the NBA. I don't think I've had a chance to ask you about Jeremy Lin. Your thoughts on Jeremy Lin and the impact. He's had a great impact on the league, obviously, but what's your thoughts on Jeremy Lin?
Yep, great impact on the league. I think he's a great player. He really is. He's found a system that has worked for his athleticism, for the kind of player he is. I haven't checked out their record lately, kind of where they're at lately. I know he's kind of died down in the sports world a little bit, but he's a great athlete. He loves the game. He plays with a lot of passion. We'll see how his stamina holds up here. You know, as time goes on, because he's probably never played this hard this long before, so we'll see how that holds up. But I'm happy for him. I'm happy for the league. They needed sort of something like this, especially with the shorter season. Things have kind of got lost a little bit, I think, here and there. It's great that another team besides Miami is getting, you know, some attention, or Dallas, which is great. So, you know, he's great. It's great for everyone around.
Okay, and I want to thank Aaron Young, who's been with us today. He's comes to us. He's our Tuesday, Thursday producer, and Jacob Bodner's with us Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So we want to thank both of them. They're with us each and every day here on AM 870 WKAR. We want to thank you for listening, and join us tomorrow at 1:05 to 2 o'clock for WKAR. We've got some very exciting guests for you tomorrow. We'll let you know who all of our three guests are for tomorrow. I know Mike DeCourcy will be with us for one of our segments tomorrow. And we've got a couple other surprises for you right here on AM 870. You've been listening to AM 870 WKAR in East Lansing. We want you to come back and join us tomorrow from 1:05 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. We want you to have yourself a safe and a pleasant evening, and I'll look forward to hearing from you tomorrow at AM on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing at 1:05. Have a safe and pleasant evening once again.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.